Good evening, everybody, and you're very brave for coming out in the rain, which has not stayed mainly on the plain, no matter what we've been led to believe. We're going to dedicate the shir to Shoshana Elka Bat Etel Dina, as we have so many times before. Hashem should bring her a refuah shlema, b'meravi ameinu. Now, in the pamphlet that I gave you, just this evening, you'll notice that the top piece is from my Rebbe. And that's going to discuss part of the aspect of the chesed of root, and the chesed related to geirut. It was a theme that I mentioned briefly last week. Some of you may recall. We're then going to go on to a diagram. It comes from an absolutely amazing book that is done by Dr. Yael Ziegler called Ruth, From Alienation to Monarchy. And she's brilliant and exciting. And I must say that a lot of what I'm sharing with you is at least indirectly, if not directly, infused by her trenchant analyses of this sefer. After that, the next page is coming from one of my Divrei Torah. It's primarily sources that appeared in one of my Divrei Torah in 2015. And last but not least, we may or may not get to checking out Orpah a little bit this evening, at least on the etymological level. There's much more to say, but this is the part that I could commit to writing. And if you're interested and intrigued by that, stay tuned. Okay. So first of all, I did mention briefly that one of the major themes of the Sefer is Chesed. And the preeminent figure on the female side, who's representative of Chesed, is Ruth. On the male side, Boaz. Ruth and Boaz, truly, to borrow a comic book term, they are truly the dynamic duo, okay, of so long ago. And they, as I suggested last week, wanted literally to change the entire Jewish world. And they knew they weren't going to do it didactically. Okay? Anyone who's ever been in the classroom knows that if you give out a bunch of rules and you yourself violate them in any way whatsoever, you know that your rules will be completely ignored by everyone else. So in other words, it is never a good idea to do this. Do as I say, but not what I do. But rather, toho kabara. Okay? If something is wrong because it's inappropriate and it's wrong for you. And if you're trying to share that with your children, your students, whoever they are. So Ruth and Boaz lived what they said. They were the personification of Chesed. Rav Soloveitchik Zatzal discusses exactly how Ruth from the get-go was the personification of Chesed. Let's take a look. You may recall last week the introduction to everything was this medrash that is brought down in Rav Soloveitchik's work. It's a posthumous work written by one of his students called Rishimot Shi'urim, Masechet Yevamot, and it's, of course, on Yevamot. And you're going to recognize this medrash, because that's what we started with last week. The Midrash Rut Rabba Ita Amar Rebbe Zeira. Rebbe Zeira said, Megillah Zu Engba, this Megillah of Rut, Engba Lo Tuma, it doesn't talk about things that are impure, V'lo Tahara, nor does it speak about things that are pure. Velo isur, velo heter. It doesn't talk about things that are proscribed and things that are allowed. And of course, as you remember, hopefully from last week, v'lama nichtava, Why was it written, therefore? L'lamedcha, to teach you. Kama sechar tov l'gomli chasadim. How much reward there is for those who practice loving kindness. So Rav Soloveitchik said, and now here are his words, more or less, you know, going probably from the Yiddish, and if not from the Yiddish, from his very, 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 very erudite English. V'yesh l'tmoa. One is amazed by this statement from the Medrash. D'halo. Because, after all, kol hilchot geirut, all of the laws of geirut, yalfinan memegilat rut, we learn from this Megillah. Ukamavuar b'yavamot, as we're taught in Yavamot itself, uberambam, and in the Rambam, b'hilchot isurei bia, the laws of prescribed relations, okay, b'perek yadalit, v'im ken, if that's the case, yesh ba heter v'yesh ba isur. So what's going on? As again, we said earlier, for sure, right here, no questions asked. The Megillah does involve itself with Isur and Heter. Certainly, at least in terms of Geirut, if not other things. So, what is then the substantive content of this Midrashic statement? So now we get into classic Rav Soloveitchik. Here's what he says. V'nira l'va'er. And it says, in my mind, the way to really understand this medrash, degam dine geirut ha'amurim b'megillat rut, that even the laws of geirut that are presented in Megillat Rut, lo nishnu kehilchot isur v'heter, they're not in the category of isur v'heter. True, do we learn isur v'heter from them? Yes, but why are they here? Says the Rav, is only, if I would have said this, you could have thrown tomatoes at me. But the Rav says it, which gives it gravitas. Look what he says. Elezehu chelek mehagimlut chasadim shel Rut. But when Rut decides to convert, wherever you go, I'll go. We're going to see, of course, one day in the Pasuk itself. Okay? When she decides to do this amazing act of going from being a Moaviyah, right? A Moabite lady, to become a Jewess, old English, when she does that, that's a singular act of Gimlut Chasadim. Let's take a look. Gimlut Chasadim, of kindness. Now, you would have thought, and I would have thought, how's that kindness? No? Or maybe you're thinking, I can see Naomi's face back there, she's sitting there going, Furfos. What are you talking about? This is kindness? Let's see what it says. The Ayin Shamba root, says Rav Soloveitchik, take a look in root, and one day, yes, we'll get to Perek Gimel, Pasuk Yud, Dichtiv, for there it says, Boaz speaking to root, Barucha at LaHashem biti, you are blessed to Hashem, my daughter. Heitaft chazdech ha'acharon, your latter level of chesed is even greater, min harishon. What's the story? What's happening here? What's going on right now?
Is this the same as when Moshe was, because he was raised in the palace, he had more impact on the Bnei Yisrael?
Well, that, you know, of any sefer of the 24 books of Tanakh that has parallel after parallel after parallel, it's Megillat Rut. And I think that that's an idea to keep in the back of your mind, but not directly germane. Okay? But where you do get the Tzara Shava Shebeneihem is, and the reason why they are similar is that Moshe comes from afar and comes back, okay? But think about it. Rut comes even from a further place. From a further place.
And a princess. I mean, she came from great wealth and gave it all up for
And gave it all up.
To be...
Right? According to the Medrash, the daughter of Eglon, the king of Moab. And Orpah was supposedly her sister from, right, Eglon also. So at any rate, but what we're told here is that your latter chesed is even greater than your first chesed. What's the latter chesed that he's talking about? Right, Boaz is talking to Ruth. Where is Ruth right now? Ruth is all for pitched, lying on the threshing floor. And she wakes him up, okay, far different than today's culture. She wakes him up by moving the blanket off his feet. And he jumps up and he goes, basically, OM goodness, what's going on? He doesn't know it's flying. And he sees this stunningly beautiful woman. And since, again, it's not the 21st century, he says, why are you here? And she reveals to him that, you know, good idea, why don't we get married, basically. And just to protect her innocence in the eyes of all, if you recall the rest of that part of the story, which we're going to get to, he sends her away in the middle of the night so nobody can see her, etc., etc. No one should think that there would be bad thoughts about her. Okay. So Rav Soloveitchik says, right, so we know what the Acharon is. We know what that case was, right? He wakes up, there she is, you know, beautiful and so forth. But says the Rav, V'lo nidbarer mahu ha'chesed arishon she'asta Ruth. We have no idea what was this first thing that she did that was so chesed there.
Same with her mother-in-law.
Yes.
And being
But how did she manage to stay with her mother-in-law?
She became a convert.
She became a convert. And that's what the Rav says. Take a look. Achen, however, Ita b'Bach. The Bach is one of the classical Mefarshim. He's most famous for his Perush on the Tur, which is the basis for ultimately for the Shulchan Aruch. So the Achen Ita b'Bach b'Perush Meshiv Nefesh in his Sefer that he wrote on Megillat Esther. You ready for this? Again, the Rav wouldn't have even have said this on his own. He got it from the Bach. The Chesed HaRishon, that's why I put it in bold and italics. The Chesed HaRishon Haya, that the first good thing she did, not to take away was staying with Naomi, but remember, how does she stay with Naomi? Your God is my God, right? We're going to see that. Bameh Shinit Gayera, because her first Chesed that she did was becoming a Gioret. The Chnisa et Atzma, and she brought herself Tachat Kanfei Hashchina. And she brought herself under the protection of the Shekhinah. Now, I know you're going to ask me, logically, because I see we still have some quizzical faces here. You're going to ask me, Yah and the Chesed was, okay? Now we're going to see it. There are three things. Now, by the way, if you looked in the Sefer that this is originally from, it does not look like this. I broke it down to make it very easy, and so a teachable moment could become a remembering moment, which is why this is for you to keep. So now I'm going to show you. The Rav analyzes three ways in which Ruth's conversion was the ultimate kind of chesed, in three different ways. One, Sheba Emet Geirut Havi Chesed Gadol Im Ha'olam. When someone chooses to become Jewish, okay, it's a chesed to the world. That's a beautiful idea. Again, it would be wonderful if the ideas I'm about to share with you became part and parcel of the universal Jewish mindset. That's all I'm going to say, in a very positive way. Again, the Rav. Shebe'emet geirut havya chesed gadol im ha'olam. It's a chesed to the world that someone chooses to be Jewish. Why? Shemevi le'olam hashafel. Because the person who chooses to be Jewish brings to this lowly world od neshama shel Yehudi, another Jewish soul. What you would have heard, a heilige neshama. Right? And what would this heilige neshama do? Shetair et ha'olam ba'or ha'Torah. Because this new Jewish person will, because they came into the world, be marbe Torah in the world. a beautiful idea, right? I must tell you, I never thought of any of this until I saw the Rav. Two, the Gerut Harei Hi Chesed La'am Yisrael. So the first idea is what? Universal. The second idea? Particularistic. But given the Rav, what does he tell everybody about, first of all? The world. Because it's our job to be an Or L'Goyim, a light unto nations, and the Rav took that very seriously. And we're supposed to make the world a better place. And it's not just supposed to be silly things you hear, you know, politicians floating about. We are supposed to make the world better. That's idea one. Two, the person who undergoes Geirut, Chesed L'Am Yisrael. Why? Hamitchazek, okay? Im Od Yehudim, because suddenly Am Yisrael has a new neshama, a rediscovered neshama, who was already where, everybody, a long time ago? Har Sinai. Saw you at Sinai. It's a really good name. Because every ger who becomes a ger was really there already. Okay? Just like you and I were there, even though we weren't yet born. Although, sometimes we may feel that way when we get up in the morning. Okay? But at any rate, the Gerut HaRei Hi Chesed L'Am Yisrael, why HaMilchazek Im Od Yehudi, were strengthened by this new Jew, Hanilve LeBeit Yisrael, who joins voluntarily to the Jewish people. So you have universal, particularistic, and then finally, it's a chesed for who? The ger themselves. There's three modalities of chesed that a ger does when they become a ger. And that's the last one he says. Umahava chesed la'atzmo. And the ger brings kindness to themselves. Unishmato. And to their soul. Shel ha'ger. Why? Because suddenly the soul of the new Jew is enlightened with Torah HaKadosha. Shemeira, because it's enlightened, or Torah Chayim, with the light of the living Torah, HaNitzchiim, that lasts forever. Is this not an amazing piece of Torah? Okay? And we're just so lucky that, you know, that here it is. So now we really understand a really valuable part of Ruth becoming Egi Oret for the world, for the Jewish people, and for herself. And that's chesed. And you can't have bigger chesed than a chesed for the world. Now, was there chesed for Naomi? You betcha. 100%. But remember, that chesed for Naomi was inextricably interwoven with the chesed of her becoming a Gioret. So there's really two kinds of chesed. There's chesed la'acher, there's chesed for another person, but then there's the chesed for the world, for the Jewish people, and for herself. Okay? All right. That's the big idea that I wasn't able to get to last week. Next, the picture. This is a picture taken from a Kindle edition that I did magical things with to get into this kind of form, okay, of Dr. Ziegler's, as I told you, majestic book. It's an amazing book. Okay, it's a sefer.
I'm sorry, what's it called?
It's called From Alienation to Monarchy. It's Ruth, From Alienation to Monarchy. Think about it. Ruth, or Ruth, initially, couldn't be more alienated from Klal Yisrael. Why? She's a Moaviyah. Okay? You know, I guess if they spoke Yiddish in those days, they would have called her a Shkatz.
A Shiksa.
A Shiksa, no?
Yeah. A Shiksa.
Yeah.
That's the proper word.
Which means abomination.
Exactly correct. Okay? That's what they would have said. Okay? That's what it was said about her. She was a nothing, the lowest of the low. She was alienated. So did the Jewish people want to have anything to do with her initially? Not at all. And yet, from her comes ultimately,
King David.
Mashiach. Right? Mashiach. David HaMelech. She's a grandmother, great-grandmother of David HaMelech. From David HaMelech eventually comes Mashiach ben David. B'miravi Amenu. Now, Dr. Ziegler's contention is that the entire, and this is, again, the big story before we go back to the Psukim. The entire Sefer Megillat Rut is a tikkun. It's a tikkun. It's a way to fix the problems, the unlimited number of problems that were taking place during the time of the Shoftim. It was a miserable, horrible period in Jewish history. That's the only way to think about it. There were civil wars. There was public immorality, the likes of which you can't imagine. And she talks about it. So if you look at the top of the triangle, the period of the Shoftim was a period of failed leadership. Why? Because there was no monarchy. And in fact, in the very beginning, in the first parak of Shoftim, Klal Yisrael says to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, or said to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what should we do now? Yeshua has passed away. We have no more direct connection from Moshe. What should we do? What does HaKadosh Baruch Hu say? I think there should be a leader from Shevet Yehuda. Does anyone listen to him?
No.
No. So then we go on the left side of the pyramid into religious deterioration. And you know it's not once, and it's not twice, and it's not three times. It's, you know, really, I have to tell you, when I first read Sefer Shoftim as an adult, you know, I'm not talking about when I was younger and I read it like, you know, whatever it was the first time. But when I read it as an adult, I was disgusted. I said, this is Am Yisrael. This is the Jewish people. Because I suddenly understood what was going on. You know, the parts that Naomi can tell you are always skipped. I suddenly understood what was going on. Okay? Like the expurgated, you know, Shoftim. Okay? And all of a sudden, I realized we were doing out and out of Avodah Zorah. I mean, the real ugly thing itself. And she mentions just a few things. For example, in chapters 17 to 18 of Shoftim, there's an actual idol. There's an establishment of an idolatrous shrine. And guess who they managed to co-opt to come there? Levim and Kohanim. Can you imagine? This is Klal Yisrael. So without the monarchy, and with the failure of the Shoftim, remember what we said last week? What's the phrase that repeats endlessly in the Sefer? In those days, every man did what they so desired, what was right in their own eyes. Well, you know what that is. If you don't have Torah and mitzvot, you have chaos and anarchy, and it's a slippery slope. Yes, one ought not to murder. Well, but he's a really bad guy, in my mind. Right? And so forth, and so on. So, you have this religious deterioration. On the other side, when you have the religious deterioration, what is going to inevitably follow?
The social problem.
Social. Okay? And, for example, the worst, most horrendous story of the entire Tanakh, the most reprehensible, the most disgusting, is clearly the rape of the concubine of Giva. What's the story? So, first of all, we're dealing with a Pelegesh. It's called the Pelegesh B'Giva. A Pelegesh had wifely responsibilities and duties, okay, but she wasn't a full wife. Okay?
She inherits nothing.
She inherits nothing.
But she is taken care of in her life.
She's taken care of in her life. Okay. Now, in a world, especially the world of the Shoftim, if a woman couldn't get married and all of this horrendous stuff is going down, I think it would be better to be a Pelegish than not to be married, because then you would have no protection whatsoever. Just think about that. And by the way, since it's being recorded, and I just wanted to be very clear, I am not advocating Pelegish. Do not misunderstand on any level. I'm just saying, for the woman's sake, it was better
at that time.
At that time.
In that environment.
In that environment. Okay?
Than being alone.
Than being alone. Because being alone meant you could be attacked basically at any moment. I'm very serious about this. It really was that way. I'm not exaggerating. Now, what happens is, the Pelegish Begiva, I'll give you the quick story, and then you'll see how horrendous this is, and then you'll see why all of Sefer Rut is a tikkun for this evil. So you have a guy whose Pelegish goes astray. He didn't treat her very well. She was probably quite lonely. And she herself, were she to have been a man, would not have deserved shlishi. She was promiscuous with someone else. So naturally, her ba'al, truly was a ba'al, a master, sent her back to mom and dad. Okay. After a while, though, he missed her. Okay. And after all, she wasn't a wife. She had no kedushin, but she had violated their trust. So he took him a while to sort of get his act together and figure, you know, I'm really missing out on all the benefits.
Would she have been able to become a Pelegish to somebody else?
No. She still was in this Pelegish status. It's a good question. Okay? It's supposed to be a davar miuchad between the Baal and the Pelegish. She violated that, though. But again, she wasn't chayavet mita because she wasn't married. Okay. After a while, he gets kind of lonely. You know, reminds you a little of who? Your friend and mine? Ahasuerus. Okay? Remember I told you, themes. So he gets lonely, he goes there. And he goes and he decides, you know, it's a great time, I'm going to feast with her father. Basically ignores her, which of course is the whole reason why she went off to the wild blue yonder to start with. Nobody likes to be ignored. Nobody likes to be treated like an object. Nobody likes to be treated as if they have no inherent value. Okay, so they're drinking, they're having a great time, and all of a sudden he just says, you know what? Let's go. I want to go back toward home. So they leave the father's house of his Pelegish. They go back and they say, you know, the closest town is where the Yavusi live. The Yavusi were one of the seven nations, which we failed to get rid of like we were supposed to have had. So he goes, well, we can't stay there. That'll be kind of dangerous. So they go to Giva in Shevet Binyamin. So far, so good? Everyone following the story? Okay. Now, if you arrive in the night in any Jewish area, what do you think, what can you reasonably expect? We'll leave the light on for you. Hospitality, right? In other words, okay, you're not going to go buy them sushi at 11 o'clock at night. I get it. But are you going to let them at least sleep in your barn? Okay. So they go through the entire town. This is how bad things have gotten in Klal Yisrael. This is the social deterioration. They go through the whole town of Giva. Nobody from the Shevet Binyamin in Giva allows them to stay with them. No one. You hearing this? Good for you. Because you hit the nail on the head.
What did you say?
Stone.
This is Klal Yisrael deteriorated to the level of Sodom and Gomorrah, a point that Dr. Ziegler makes explicitly, and you get the cupid out. You did it. Okay? So there's no place where they can be. So someone who isn't from Giva, and you're going to see how close it is to Sodom, someone from Shevet Ephraim, who happens to be staying in Giva on a short time, says, you know what, this is pashnisht. Well, he didn't speak Yiddish. But he says, this is not good. You can't sleep out there. Come to my house. Come to my house. Now, you want to get ready for parallels? You know what's coming.
He cut off his legs?
No, no, no. They go into his house. And all the men, listen to what I'm telling you, because I'm not exaggerating. All the men from Shevet Binyamin that are in Giva start pounding on his door. And they say, send the man out so we can know him.
I've heard that before.
Exactly like Sodom. And the man acts just like who? Lot. And he says, you know, you can't take my guest. And then, you know, they have this little conversation behind the door. What should we do? So they throw the Pelegesh out to an entire crowd of hundreds of men. Use your imagination. And she dies. You would have thought that's the end of how terrible things were during the Shoftim. There's another level. Are you ready for this? The master takes his dead Pelegesh, who one gets the sense he wasn't all that close to at this time, throws her over his donkey, walks a little bit away from the guy's house, and then, you can't make this up, chops her up into many, many pieces. He then takes, how many pieces? 11 pieces. Listen to the number 11.
One for each Shevet.
How many tribes are there?
12.
Minus Binyamin, 11. He then sends parts of her body with notes to every one of the other tribes and says, this is what Shevet Binyamin did to my Pelegesh. This starts a major civil war. And all the tribes attack who? Shevet Binyamin. And not only do they attack Shevet Binyamin, what else do? They take oaths that no one from Shevet Binyamin, because of this horrendous behavior, may ever, ever marry any of their daughters of the 11 other tribes.
For how long?
Think Brooklyn. Forever.
And that held?
Yes, I'll tell you. You ready? Now, the Civil War goes on. Well, you know, 11 to 1 isn't real good odds. Mm-mm. And all of Shevet Binyamin, except for just a few people, are completely wiped out. Now, those that are still alive, this is a civil war, okay? Those that are still alive
have to take asylum.
Take asylum here, there, ever, but they can't get married. So what do they wind up doing? Since they can't get married legitimately,
marry out.
What do? No, they don't marry out. They steal brides. They just grab them off the street so that the tribe does not get wiped out.
Not a good bedtime.
This is not something to share with your children if, you know, they're under 20, okay? But this is the world of the Shoftim. And at the very end of the Sefer, remember what were the words that I told you the Sefer started with? God, what should we do? And God's answer? Get a leader from Shevet Yehuda. What do you think some of the final words of the Sefer are? Oh my God, what should we do? And God, with, you know, it's ironic, okay, says again to Klal Yisrael, get a leader from Shevet Yehuda. Now, Boaz is from what Shevet, everyone? Yehuda. Who does the ultimate leader, the first kings come from?
Yehuda.
Who is the first true, Shevet Yehuda king? David. Because Shmuel is a Navi, Shaul is not from Shevet Yehuda, but he's a temporary. Could have been Mashiach, but poor Shaul. That's a whole conversation. We'll do that maybe one year. Okay? But now we have, finally, Boaz, Ruth, with a tikkun for Sefer Shoftim. Tell me that is not an amazing story. And I want you to know, by the way, you probably think, Rabbi Entengoff is probably exaggerating. I left out some of the gruesome parts. Okay?
You left out the gruesome parts?
Yeah. Okay?
I recall when the people asked Shmuel to give them a king, yep, he was very reluctant. He wasn't for it.
Oh.
And yet,
yep,
now you're saying, though, Hashem has said, get a leader from Yehudim.
Yep.
So, where's, like, it is.
What you're saying is, it doesn't shtim. I got it.
Well, was Hashem saying get a king, or could it have been a shofet, or
a special king?
It had to be the right king at the right time. And the real reason with Shmuel, that Shmuel was upset, and Kutcher Brichu was upset, if you go back to those psukim, is that Klal Yisrael says, we want a king like all the other
nations.
Mm-hmm.
Big problem.
Wait a second.
Not the right reason.
Wait a second. Right? It's almost like, you can almost see like in an action movie, Bruce Willis says, wrong reason! Mm-hmm. And then like, right? That's what you're kind of hearing here. Like, Shmuel is fit to be tied. And he was pretty good guy, except, the only time we see him get upset is when he hacks Agag to death. Okay, that was, of course, in those days, a mitzvah. Please don't try this at home. Okay, that's the only time, and he's normally very calm. Okay, Shaul is the king that's chosen, but he's not Davidic, he's not Yehuda, so he's only going to be temporary, even though he could have been Mashiach, but was not. Okay, so along come Ruth and Boaz, and there was this song a couple years ago, we're going to change the world. That was Ruth and Boaz. And how did they want to change the world? Through modeling, like I started with before, mm-hmm, we talked about a classroom. Mm-hmm. Okay, like for example, a parent who gets angry that their five-year-old hits their three-year-old, and then turns around and patches the five-year-old for hitting the three-year-old.
There you go. That's a problem.
Okay? This is a problem. Okay? Okay, or a parent gets angry, the kid's a little bit older, and the kid uses his first curse word and says back to him a curse word, don't you know we don't talk that way? It's not going to work. So instead, you have Boaz and Ruth, who are creating the line for the Davidic kingdom to eventually arise, who are trying to change the world through behavior and through chesed, right? The olam, right? Chesed is the essence of the world. All right. Last but not least for tonight, because I didn't think we're going to quite go this far, but okay. Moabite women and the men of Israel. Now, that's important because if you look in Pasuk Dalet, okay, actually, let's just at least get Gimel and Dalet. It says, going back to the Psukim, you see where it is? On Root Perek Aleph from last week's collection of material. So it says, V'yamod Elimelech ish Naomi. Elimelech died, the husband of Naomi. Okay, so V'tisha er, he u'shnei v'neha. And she's left alone with her two sons. What do her two sons right away do? Do they say, Mom, let's go back home. Things aren't looking too good here. No, they marry Moabite women. Vayisu lehem nashim. Now, I guess if your name was Machlon and Kilion, disease and extinction, I guess marrying Moabite women wasn't the worst thing that you had in mind.
How sad.
Okay? So, V'yisulehem nashi ma'oviot. They married Moabite women. Shem ha'achad Orpah. The first one's name was Orpah. V'shem ha'shenit Rut. And the second was Rut. V'yeshvu sham ke'eser shanim. And they lived there for 10 years. Okay? Now, go back to this week's, which looks like this, and go to the page that says Moabite women and the men of Israel. Now, what kind of relationship did the men of Israel have with Moabite women?
Moshe Rabbeinu.
Okay.
His wife was Moabite.
She was Cushi. She was not Moabite. They what?
There's a whole gathering of them, getting together of them.
And they all got together, right? And they were not singing Amazing Grace.
It was like okay? Zorah, right?
And right, it was a vote of Zorah. And how many of Jewish men died? 24,000. Let's take a look. Final chapter of Parshat Balak depicts the licentious acts of many of the men of the generation of the desert. How many men?
24,000.
We're not talking onesies, twosies, guys. 24,000 with the daughters of Moab. So the translation, just for the purpose of going very quickly, Israel settled in Shittim, and the people began to commit harlotry, use your imagination, with the daughters of the Moabites. They invited the people to the sacrifices of their gods, right? Everything is beautiful. And the people ate and prostrated themselves to their gods. Israel became attached to Baal Peor. By the way, how was Baal Peor worshipped? Anyone remember?
Fire.
They threw their people into the
Baal Peor. If you were looking for the most disgusting way you could possibly worship an idol, this is what they did. They defecated to the idol in front. No, you think I'm kidding? That's what.
Bad honoring the idol.
Because he was the god of Peor, that which comes out. Baal Peor. Okay. Listen. It's better than blood. So Israel became attached to Baal Peor, and the anger of the Lord flared against Israel. Gee, I can't understand, why was God upset? Okay? Now, I could understand if there was a couple guys who went astray. Okay? Imagine 24,000 Jewish men. Now remember, it's true, most of them by this point had not witnessed Har Sinai. Okay, because we're toward the end of Sefer Bamidbar. Yet, they certainly heard about Har Sinai, right?
And it was, they had a leader.
And they had a leader. Okay, yeah. Now you ready? How did this go down? So go to the bottom of the page.
We did not have the slave mentality that we said that.
Right, and that's leaving. Correct. So who worked out this whole deal? That licentious behavior coupled with Avodah Zarah. Who worked that all out?
Bilam
and his buddy Balak. The king of what place?
Moab.
So you can understand, by the way, that when everyone at first sees Ruth, they're not sitting there going, yay, a Moabiah, just what we needed.
Mm-hmm. But they didn't care. I mean, they were so hefker and so
right,
weird.
But still, she wasn't even viewed as being human. Because after all, the stories were still out there. Mm-hmm. You know, your relatives killed my relatives.
It's like a Nazi. I'm sorry.
Yeah, well, that's exactly it.
Right.
Okay, so let's just very quickly finish this up. He, Bilam, said to Balak, the God of these Jews hates profligate and hedonistic behavior. As you all know, right? What do we read on Yom Kippur afternoon?
Yonah.
Right? And we also read about profligate behavior. Okay? So in order that we can really give this the proper approach, we're going to pick it up here next week. We're going to go on to understand Orpah and what she was really all about. Suffice it to say, Orpah, when she leaves, Naomi goes back to being a true Moabiah in the worst sense. Mm-hmm.